The title of the presentation of our workshop is, I made it a bit dramatic because I think the situation we're facing is indeed a bit dramatic. Wisdom in a world on fire, and the relevance of Krishnamurti's teachings to what is happening in our time. I probably don't need to remind everyone of what is happening, but just in case, just to paint a picture, it might just be simple to just mention a few things. Everybody knows this issue of what's happening in terms of climate change, and fire is literally what's the planet is burning. Now, you see, look, last year, for example, the devastating fires in Australia, everybody knows. California, those of you who live there, and it reached right up the west coast to Vancouver. It's an island. They're on the water. It's Canada. What fire? Well, yes, the whole thing is now dangerously close to catastrophic. When I saw on television the whole the Arctic forests in Russia burning, I still don't understand very well. Probably someone in Sweden will understand better. How come that the Arctic forests are burning? I was familiar with forest burning in Spain and Portugal. It gets very dry in the summer, and people are mad enough to set fire to the hills. Most of these fires are actually provoked by human beings. They are not natural at all. So even that is mad, totally mad. And when I was little, I remember this thing reminded me of something when I was little that my mother said in a very Christian prophetic way, and I don't know where she got it from, that last time the world ended with water. I suppose she was remembering the flood, but next time it will end in fire. I couldn't make head or tails of that because I didn't know what the causes were, where in the Bible she might have read it, or what sermon of the priest must have said something like that. But it comes back to my memory as a pretty accurate prophecy of what is taking place. How come that we've known, in a way, this thing of our actions have consequences, and one of the consequences is this, that we are destroying the planet. But we can see that somehow our consciousness is not up to the challenge even of realizing the full consequences of our own actions. That is a very, for me, that's where the problem lies. The world is on fire because we don't realize that we are causing it, and that we therefore can ourselves are the cause, and we therefore need to take good stock of what we are in order to bring that an end to that destructiveness about. That all of us know it. All mankind by now is aware of it. And if we needed any proof, we have the UN climate change investigators producing these reports, which are no longer leave any room for doubt. But we are not yet there. The political, economic forces are against it. I was just watching the news recently, a couple of days ago. Australia is a major exporter of coal. So they have elections now. And so you would think that the Greens would take hold of this and says, we have to stop this exporting of coal because it's one of the most polluting fossil fuels, right? Like together with petrol. But what were the politicians saying? No, this is our livelihood. This is what pays for our education and for our clinics and our hospitals. So there we are. We mean to survive. So we do things that undermine our survival. This becomes a very challenging situation because we're then in a contradiction. And this is the question. How come we human beings maintain this state of contradiction, whereby we mean something good, such as survival, good standard of living, the education of my children, and all that, and we use the means to achieve those goals, get the money, have the economic wherewithal, which will bring about the destruction of the planet itself, which undermines the survival, and for which education is not helping at all, because the mind itself is contradicting itself. So for me, that is one of the major challenges. Now, another thing that came to mind while thinking about the subject and trying to go into it, and this first chapter of our workshop about being in the world, and the question of just the issue of the emergency of it, that the house is on fire, was also the famous sermon by Buddha, right? The fire sermon is come to be known as that, and was made much of course, by T.S. Eliot in his poem, The Wasteland. Look at it, The Wasteland. Already that's what we are aiming at, we're going for, right? The earth becoming a wasteland with our own desires. What did Buddha say? He said, the world is on fire. The senses are burning. The body is burning. The mind is burning. And therefore, everything that comes out of that mind and out of that body. And what is it burning with? It's burning with the fires of greed, hatred, and illusion. So they had a pretty good diagnosis, Siddhartha Gautama, about what is involved in this. So we'll also look at that. But talking theoretically is perhaps useful because we have to look at subtle things. And yet, look, if we look into our own specific situation of being in the world, of existence, that sign, being there, right? In Heidegger's terms, being there, what does it mean? To be born a human being, to grow up in a society, to acquire a certain knowledge, develop a certain skill, adopt a certain set of values, take on an identity, and then function, supposedly within the specific society or in the world as a whole, in a more or less responsible fashion. So the question of responsibility is also there. How responsible we are, and in what way each of us can take that on board. Is it possible even? The whole thing is so large. It's like a juggernaut. It is going by itself. What can I do about the massive industry of coal in Australia? They will go on because they make money and that supports their livelihoods. So that can be done. And it's not just that about environmental issues. I mean, we're all aware here in Europe, at least, you may not be so concerned over there, but here in Europe, Sweden, for example, but even the Netherlands, the whole European Union, we're really worried lest the whole conflict in Ukraine should spill over. The madness of it is too much to bear. It's really quite, every day we have that on our consciousness. Every day is coming across us, right? That is, that there is violence, and that we human beings, well, whoever, most of us, face this issue of violence, and that we are destructive intrinsically. That the structure of society, I'm putting that forward, may be based on violence. So violence itself may be structurally inbuilt into society. Otherwise, we wouldn't have armies. If there was no violence in society, in structurally, as such, with a border, with an identity, in competition for resources, power, and position with others, we wouldn't have an army. And everybody knows very well what a waste that is and what it means. It means that you have a whole body of people who are ready at any moment when called upon to defend or to attack or to whatever, following authority, the country, the ideology, the purposes of the leaders. So being born in such a society, one has a tremendous responsibility right off. Look at it. Economically, I am a consumer and a producer. But I'm also a member of society that says, this is my border and this is my identity, and that's yours. And that competition, that quality of inherent conflict, division and conflict, Krishnamurti's diagnosis seems very universal and very deep but maybe it's subtle and subtle when it comes to the application, which is he issued or enunciated what he called a law, psychological law of what we human beings are about, which is that where there is division, there must be conflict. Now, not the division between me and the table, not the division even between, or the separation or distance between us now, you being in one place and I in another, but psychologically, that by creating an identity that is separate from another, I have created a division whereby eventually, sooner or later, a conflict will arise. I find that a very important thing to bear in mind when looking at what it means to be in the world and what it means to be responsible in relation to it. Krishnamurti's other major statement that you are the world and the world is you is even deeper, perhaps, in terms of comprehending that to be in the world actually is to realize psychologically, socially, that each of us is the world. So one is not in the world as something separate from oneself. That's a tremendous thing to realize. And K, as far as I understand, maybe I don't understand it fully, sees in this perception of our universal humanity one of the ways in which we can dissolve the inherent division between human beings. Now, that sounds a bit lovely, abstract. If you go now to Ukraine and start preaching this kind of stuff, I don't think it will go anywhere. Right? And yet, my feeling is, ultimately, every one of those people must realize somewhere, at some point in their lives, that they are the same. And that this is totally artificial. This killing is driven by an illusion, by a really destructive force, which has nothing to do with the deeper actuality of our common humanity. That is a tremendous indictment, if true, we have to look into it. See, look, the things that we do, right? Again, the news is an important source of information concerning what we do and what we are. They just put on trial a poor little boy, a 23-year-old in Ukraine, a tank, Russian tank commander, for killing an old man in a village who was going around with a bicycle but had a mobile phone. So his superior told him to shoot this old man because he might be informing the Ukrainian forces about the Russians' position. There we are. But why the war in the first place? 21st century, this is what everybody says, 21st century, civilized Europe, civilized, quotes everywhere, Europe, and we have a war of a major country power like Russia invading a 40 million people. There's 40 million people in Ukraine, a country of that nature. I don't know, I myself maybe am too small in the geopolitical spectrum to even begin to think of such a thing, that you would have it in your mind for X number of reasons, so-called reasons, no reason really, to go and kill, invade, displace, murder, destroy a country of 40 million people. What is in our minds at their highest levels of power to make this possible? I live in this world. This is the world. Violence is part of it, the structure of power, the structure of division and conflict, and not just in relation to each other, but in relation to nature. So the fragmentation is the issue. To be in the world is to face this quality of fragmentation right from the beginning. I think as human beings, when we recall, when we have already a fair amount of experience, and we recall our own past, what happened in our own families, what our upbringing was like, we see a number of patterns which are pretty standard in our conditioning. This is the question. This become a tradition of mankind to condition us to division, to separation, to conflict. And therefore, to be in the world is to be a kind of fighter, right off the bat. When we were in school and we were bullied, well, we were bullies, yeah, I wasn't a bully, but well, there were bullies in my school, and I was bullied. There you had it. But also, as at home we were bullied, the pater familias had extraordinary power, authority. So look, factors of authority, the structural conditioning of division, conflict, and violence. Authority is one of them. Power. Therefore, you have that coming through socially, right? Dictatorships, I'm afraid, is like that. And you have to obey. Obedience, authority. So to question authority is very important if we're going to be responsible at all. Because if we just follow orders, and the leader, who the commander is mad, and all these commanders are mad, then we end up doing the wrong thing. We end up being irresponsible. So, authority. This was very strong in my background. As a force for destructive distortion of consciousness. Because, one, religiously, it imposed dogmas. Questioning was not possible. Therefore, intelligence was undermined. Because it was an imposition, sensitivity was not allowed, and affection was denied. Now, look at it. If we deny sensitivity, affection, and intelligence, we are denying the best qualities we have. So what kind of society, what kind of world can we create when we start out by destroying the fundamental aspects of human wholeness? Huh. You see, to me, that was a very strong question. It still is, because it's still going on. The absence of real consideration and love in the world is so pervasive. You see it everywhere, in every all kinds of things. Civilized world and non-civilized world are very similar. Human beings were still in the stream of conditioning wherein somehow these divisions and these conflicts in our upbringing are a denial of those fundamental wholesome qualities of sensitivity, affection, and intelligence because of the imposition of authority, of tradition, dogmatism, of the absence of love, and the persistence of violence at almost every point in our lives. How come? That is not, you see, as a kid, I rebelled. You can understand why. Because I said to myself, come on, this cannot be the way we were meant to live. I still say the same every day when I watch the news. I still say the same. That little kid is still puzzled by these grown-ups who continue to behave in the same old stupid way. We don't learn a thing. Time passes and we don't transform. We do not change, not fundamentally. We're making some changes, which is good. Welfare state in Europe, I am all for it. The European Union, I'm all for it. But even that is problematic. These thinkers said, we have wars on the continent for so long. We must put an end to it. So what shall we do? Well, one of the causes of war is nationalism, the borders, the competition for power. So let's dissolve nationalism. So that's excellent, excellent. I thought, wow, that was intelligent. Therefore, my being French, Spanish, English, or, well, the English are something else. They just Brexited. They decided that they were not for this federation because they want to remain themselves and they have an island to prove it. I'm sorry about my irony, but I do find it a bit contradictory to seek that kind of identity because, you see, we used to make a joke when I was at Brockwood, as Krishnamurti School in England. There was a famous poet, British poet, who said, no man is an island. And we used to reply, yes, no man is an island, except the Englishman. Isolation is inbuilt in the notion of identity. Well, we want to be ourselves and no one else, right? But are we such identities, right? Is it that we are different? And look all the problems that is already creating, right? They didn't think it through. So now they have a major problem in Northern Ireland. It's going to come back to haunt them, this the separation, because a border, they don't want a border between themselves, and another border is going to come in, and that's going to create violence. They didn't think it through. The notion of where there is division, there must be conflict, has not penetrated the political spectrum. It should. It's very good for these people if they were to reflect upon it very carefully and not just look at their own petty little importance for the moment, momentary importance. It's all momentary here. There's no real long view of things. And the long view is we have to dissolve these borders because we are responsible for violence. And these are one of the causes. So our responsibility is to remove the causes, right? Instead, what do? We go invade a country, or we say, aha, ciao, ciao, Europe, we are different, and we want to be ourselves and have command of our destiny. Well, I don't know what that destiny will be. It's okay, nobody's making a problem of it, but is the separation itself is the problem. As long as I maintain my own separate identity, I am the problem. Krishnamurti brings it down to that, doesn't he? And I always wonder, you know, how subtle, how deeply sensitive one may need to be to comprehend the depth of the statement that the root of violence is the very notion of self. That as long as I have a self, an ego, a notion of myself as a separate entity, there will be division and conflict. Therefore, the very notion of me is the essence of irresponsibility. I boggle even as at the words I'm saying. I'm just basically quoting Kay, and that hits me hard, because the me needs to dissolve. Therefore, if I don't want to be next time have an outburst of reaction against people whom I consider did something wrong to me. You see, we carry all that burden of memory. Identity is memory. What would be any country without memory? This would be a good thing, no? David Bohm used to be very fond of the film Space Odyssey, 2001, A Space Odyssey, in which the computer, you remember? Some of you may remember, it's like this space travel, and he goes on this spaceship, and his spaceship is basically controlled by a computer. The HAL, HAL is the computer. And there is, of course, an astronaut in there, a couple of astronauts. But HAL has his own idea where it's going and where it's doing. And when the astronauts are wanting to do something else, he starts destroying the astronauts because he thinks that they are sabotaging his deeper mission. The self is doing a bit of the sabotage because he thinks it has a deeper mission. But the computer works on memory. If you release the memory cells, is the only releasing the memory cells, unplugging them, is the only way to be able to control this computer. So this is what we are. As long as we are leaning on memory to sustain our identities, and we are so identified with them that we cannot separate ourselves from it, we have separation with another. And that is the source of division and conflict. I never thought of it, you see, that my memory would be so significant in terms of what happens in relationship. That the self built upon a structure of the past, derived from my family, my race, the tradition, the culture, the experiences, the education, even the environment, the whole thing, and not just of the particular time I happened to be born in, because that very time is the consequence of another time that was before, the way the properties were divided, the way the church was established, and so on and so forth, the way Franco was running the country, I will come from Spain, and so on and so forth. So all that is a sequence of time, a memory. Memory is working its way through the world and creating us. We seem to be the creators of memory, the ones who remember, but the memory then becomes the computer programming whereby we continue to act in a self-destructive way. Because we think we have a mission of becoming, we're actually sabotaging our own survival. This is a total contradiction, which should wake our intelligence. The ancient Greeks had a notion that you only begin to question or begin to think when you realize that there is a contradiction. So contradiction should be a sign of alarm that we really are, as Krishnamurti used to put it, that thought itself, that consciousness itself, is at the end of its tether. Why? Because he's hitting his own limit in the way he has been going. And one of the primary sources of that limitation, where it meets its limitation, is in the self-defeating notion of identity. Who wants to drop their identity, though? I ask myself also that, huh? Am I ready to say, hey, hey, Javier, wipe it out, this identity is no good. Not that I want another, but that identity per se is itself, its own necessary, carries its own history, carries its own conditioning with it, and therefore denies freedom, denies perception, denies relationship. Now, what happens to us if we don't have relationship, you see? This is a major question. If we destroy relationship, we destroy really the very ground of our existence. Being in the world, creating a world of peace, means that we have to relate as human beings totally. Not across borders, not with these divisions, not with the me here and the you there, but totally. We don't even perceive that we are one humanity. The one, you are the world is you, is not perceived. Right? Is it perceived? If it were perceived really, and not just perceived or thought as an idea, but felt, okay, also called for feeling, this has to be felt. Do we really feel the total universality of our humanity that is shared with others? Now, I live here in the Netherlands, and so it's a different country. It's a different culture. They have Protestantism somewhere there. I come from Catholic background. They are sort of very individualistic. They are very pragmatic. They really have a highly structured society. I've never seen anything like it. Fantastic. And they have too, because the sea is coming. They stole land from the sea, you see, so the sea is always claiming it back. So that's a very big problem. But fortunately, they have an army of engineers. Invisible. It's wonderful. It's really wonderful. I admire them a lot. Because they're an invisible army of engineers that hold the sea at bay. But of course, with all our industry, the sea level is rising. And that's going to be a major issue in the future. Maybe the Netherlands will cease to exist. But meanwhile, I'm here, being in this world. You see, the world is also changing, even geographically, even physically. We have land that is maybe not, will be sea in no time. So there we are. I have a difference of attitude. And I am maybe more extrovert and so on. And I sort of sense of, I feel that relationship has to do with warmth. And they don't think that. They sort of, your space, my space. Your thing, your thing. It's also my thing, your thing. And so, okay. So you have to respect that and step lightly around the place and as discreetly as you can. But the thing I'm talking about is that the culture can also make a difference. And yet, there is this human background, and at times I wonder, when is it that even with my neighbors, there will be this feeling of we are all together? Even in my neighborhood, everybody's in their little house. Here's my house, And there is my fence, and this is my bloom in the pot, and this is my car. Mind your business. Sometimes even saying hello looks like an intrusion. I don't believe that is an intrusion on my part, but it feels like an intrusion. So even loving your neighbor, having a relationship with your neighbor as human beings, right, seems sometimes almost an impossible affair, impossible injunction, impossible. And at the same time, I feel, of course, that I am a human being. So you see, the talking of how do we realize that we really are with others and that we have to be with others because we are there together in the same business. When I fall ill, of course, the system is there, fortunately, fantastic. Though I don't have a problem with the organization. But yet the contact with people, human relationship is deeply troubled. And there is this alienation, that the isolation we impose on one another on a daily basis. Because it's me here and it's you there. This is my thing and that is your thing. This is my idea and that's your idea. You come from here and I come from there. And I mind my business and you mind your business. The me and the you, the me and the mine, continue to be major factors of division. We haven't found a way together to a real trust, to a real consideration. Partly that is because egotism has selfishness has been very well entrenched in our consciousness. So everybody is afraid. We are afraid of each other because we are greedy. You see, the three evils of Buddhism, greed, hatred, and illusion. We are driven by illusions. We are greedy, ambitious, lustful. And then there is division, conflict, hate. So we are dangerous to each other. So that's maybe one important thing to realize, that the world won't be at peace as long as I am a danger to you, as long as you are a danger to me, because of this selfish motivation that seems to be so central to our consciousness. So that's what I have to question first and foremost. Where am I coming from in any relationship, life being relationship, in any interaction? What kind of world does the self make? Isn't the self, as Kay said, the root of division and therefore of conflict? Isn't the self the primary force that seeks power? People want to be somebody, so they seek power. They seek possession. They seek wealth and everything else. What do you think is happening in Ukraine? It's the search for power, domination, the recreation of an old idea of an identity that is dead. And for the sake of the dead, we kill the living. This, I think, is the greatest crime of all, to kill the living for the sake of a dead idea. And all ideas are dead. We don't contact each other beyond ideas. This is a major challenge. Can we live, therefore, without ideas? And the first idea is the idea of me. I'm not putting it myself so strongly, maybe. I'm putting it strongly because it is really, when I was looking at Kay and so on, I said, wow, that is really, if you take it to heart, it's a very, very challenging thing to even consider. That ideas, which we value and we need at certain levels, right, technically and so on, maybe are in the way. And they themselves constitute the nucleus of the self. But an idea is a dead thing. The word idea comes from a Greek word, eidei, which means to see. But the idea is what has been seen, is what the mind retains of some kind of perception. And in many instances, not even something that has been seen, it's something that has been thought from certain things, maybe partially. So that is an important issue. The world we live in is a world of ideas. Is a world of make-believe, identification, in which the me is at the center. Then the me identifies with other ideas, is all within the field of consciousness. Identifies with the idea of Russia, with the idea of Protestantism, with the idea of Catholicism, with the idea of etc. All of these wars, all of these conflicts, all of these murders that are reported a day to day are based on ideas. So this also raises a major question. How come we don't see through the ideas and drop them instantly because they are dangerous? It's leading to these sort of things. Keep the ideas that are useful. The idea of what? I don't know, a watch. All right, keep ideas that are significant, but not these ideas that go to the self and go to divide and go to destroy. Could we do that? Could we be so subtle and intelligent that we see through this barrage of self-deception in the pursuit of fulfillment, of glory, of becoming, that are destroying mankind? That's why Kay said, "Can you live anonymously?" I thought that was also very challenging, because I want to be famous, you see. I want to write a book. Well, not now, but in the past, I wanted to write a book and make my name, you see, to everybody, because otherwise, who are we? We had to be, we had to become, we had to be somebody. Therefore, we had to have a name. Our name has to mean something. But you know, the nameless may be the more significant. That was Kay's thing. And I thought, what? Can I really live without a name? Meaning, live truly, live without ideas, live without possessions, psychologically. I have to own a place because, well, I don't own it, I rent it. But you have to do that. That's the system. So at certain levels, you just have to go along with it. But don't own anything, because that's the possession, the attachment, identification. That will change the world. This is the idea. I like that idea. Of saying, what level do we have to come of abandoning the structure of consciousness, possession, identity that we have built and that we have been conditioned into, right from the animal? Huh? I didn't even mention the animal. The animal is right there with the whole and the possession and the tribe and the territory and the hierarchy. It's all animal. So to be truly human may mean to go into these things and see about. Is it possible to live free from the factors of division and conflict, which is from this conditioned that is centered on the idea of self? Tough job, but otherwise we won't be the world. We won't be in the world and not of the world, which is the essence of the whole point that Krishnamurti was bringing about, to be in the world, in relationship, be the world, but not of it in the sense of how it is structured at the moment. What the world is the denial of the wholeness of humanity. It's not helping us. And therefore, it's up to us to see whether we can do something to bring, restore that wholeness to the world, which means to us, to our lives.